name stopped him cold. For a second, his knees were rubbery, his shoulders sagged, and he told himself that no, he was not dreaming. In a flash, he thought of all the horrors the word Backman brought with it. How sad to be so terrified of your own name. There were two of them. The one with the voice arrived on the scene from the other side of Via Fondazza. He had basically the same suit, but with a bold white shirt with no buttons on the collar. He was older, shorter, and much thinner. Mutt and Jeff, thick and thin. "What do you want?" Marco said. They were slowly reaching for their pockets. "We're with the FBI," the thick one said. "American English, probably Midwest." "Sure you are," Marco said. They went through the required ritual of flashing their badges, but under the darkness of the portico, Marco could read nothing. The dim light over an apartment door helped a little. "I can't read those," he said. "Let's take a walk," said the thin one. Boston Irish. Walk came out walk. "You guys lost?" Marco said without moving. He didn't want to move, and his feet were quite heavy anyway. "We know exactly where we are." "I doubt that. You got a warrant?" "We don't need one." The thick one made the mistake of touching Marco's left elbow, as if he would help him move along to where they wanted to go. Marco jerked away. "Don't touch me. You boys get lost. You can't make an arrest here. All you can do is talk." "Fine, let's go have a chat," said the thin one. "I don't have to talk." "There's a coffee shop a couple of blocks away," said the thick one. "Great. Have some coffee and a pastry, but leave me alone." Thick and Thin looked at each other, then glanced around, not sure what to do next, not sure what plan B entailed. Marco wasn't moving. Not that he felt very safe where he was, but he could almost see a dark car waiting around the corner. "Where the hell is Luigi right now?" he asked himself. "Is this part of his conspiracy?" He'd been discovered, found, unmasked, called by his real name on Via Fondazza. This would certainly mean another move, another safe house. The thin one decided to take control of the encounter. "Sure, we can meet right here. There are a lot of folks back home who'd like to talk to you. Maybe that's why I'm over here." "We're investigating the pardon you bought." "Then you're wasting a hell of a lot of time and money, which would surprise no one." "We have some questions about the transaction." "What a stupid investigation," Marco said, spitting the words down at the thin one. For the first time in many years, he felt like the broker again, berating some haughty bureaucrat or dim-witted congressman. "The FBI spends good money sending two clowns like you all the way to Bologna, Italy, to tackle me on a sidewalk so you can ask me questions that no fool in his right mind would answer? You're a couple of dumbasses, you know that? Go back home and tell your boss that he's a dumbass, too. And while you're talking to him, tell him he's wasting a lot of time and money if he thinks I paid for a pardon." "So you deny?" "I deny nothing. I admit nothing. I say nothing, except that this is the FBI at its absolute worst. You boys are in deep water, and you can't swim." Back home, they'd slap him around a little. Push him, curse him, swap insults. But on foreign soil, they weren't sure how to behave. Their orders were to find him, to see if he did in fact live where the CIA said he was living, and if found, they were supposed to jolt him, scare him, hit him with some questions about wire transfers and offshore accounts. They had it all mapped out and had rehearsed it many times, but under the porticos of Via Fondazza, Mr. Lazzari was annihilating their plans. "We're not leaving Bologna until we talk," said the thick one. "Congratulations, you're in for a long vacation." "We have our orders, Mr. Backman."
"And I've got mine."
"Just a few questions, please," said the thin one. "Go see my lawyer," Marco said and began to walk away in the direction of his apartment.
"Who's your lawyer?"
"Carl Pratt." They weren't moving, weren't following, and Marco picked up his pace. He crossed the street, glanced quickly at his safe house, but didn't slow down. If they wanted to follow, they waited too long. By the time he darted onto Via del Piombo, he knew they could never find him. These were his streets now, his alleys, his darkened doorways to shops that wouldn't open for 3 more hours. They found him on Via Fondazza only because they knew his address. At the southwestern edge of Old Bologna, near the Porto San Stefano, he caught a city bus and rode it for half an hour, until he stopped near the train station at the northern perimeter. There he caught another bus and rode into the center of the city. The buses were filling. The early risers were getting to work. A third bus took him across the city again to the Porta Saragozza, where he began the 3.6-kilometer hike up to San Luca. At the 400th arch, he stopped to catch his breath, and between the columns, he looked down and waited for someone to come sneaking up behind him. There was no one back there as he expected. He slowed his pace and finished the climb in 55 minutes. Behind the Santuario di San Luca, he followed the narrow pathway where Francesca had fallen and finally parked himself on the bench where she had waited. From there, his early morning view of Bologna was magnificent. He removed his parka to cool off. The sun was up, the air was as light and clear as any he had ever breathed, and for a long time Marco sat very much alone and watched the city come to life. He treasured the solitude and the safety of the moment. Why couldn't he make the climb every morning and sit high above Bologna with nothing to do but think and maybe read the newspapers, perhaps call a friend on the phone and catch up on the gossip? He'd have to find the friends first. It was a dream that would not come true. With Luigi's very limited cell phone, he called Ermanno and canceled their morning session. Then he called Luigi and explained that he didn't feel like studying. "Is something wrong?" "No, I just need a break." "That's fine, Marco, but we're paying Ermanno to teach you, okay? You need to study every day." "Drop it, Luigi. I'm not studying today." "I don't like this." "And I don't care. Suspend me. Kick me out of school." "Are you upset?" "No, Luigi, I'm fine. It's a beautiful day, springtime in Bologna, and I'm going for a long walk."
"Where?"
"No thanks, Luigi. I don't want company."
"What about lunch?"
Hunger pains shot through Marco's stomach. Lunch with Luigi was always delicious, and he always grabbed the check.
"Sure. Let me think. I'll call you back."
"Sure, Luigi. Ciao." They met at 12:30 at Café Atene, an ancient dive in an alley down a few steps from street level. It was a tiny place with small square tables practically touching each other. The waiters jostled around with trays of food held high overhead. Chefs yelled from the kitchen. The cramped dining room was smoky, loud, and packed with hungry people who enjoyed talking at full volume as they ate. Luigi explained that the restaurant had been around for centuries, tables were impossible to get, and the food was, of course, superb. He suggested they share a plate of calamari to get things started. After a morning of arguing with himself up at San Luca, Marco had decided not to tell Luigi about his encounter with the FBI. At least not then, not that morning. He might do it the next day or the next, but for the moment he was still sorting things out. His principal reason for holding back was that he did not want to pack up and run again, not on Luigi's terms. If he ran, he would be alone. He couldn't begin to imagine why the FBI would be in Bologna, evidently without the knowledge of Luigi and whoever he was working for. He was assuming Luigi knew nothing of their presence. He certainly seemed to be much more concerned with the menu and the wine list. Life was good. Everything was normal. The lights went out. Suddenly Café Atene was completely dark, and in the next instant a waiter with a tray of someone's lunch came crashing across their table, yelling and cursing and spilling himself onto both Luigi and Marco. The legs of the antique table buckled, and its edge crashed hard onto Marco's lap. At about the same time, a foot or something hit him hard on the left shoulder. Everyone was yelling, glass was breaking, bodies were getting shoved. Then from the kitchen, someone screamed,